but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Petros Papadakis from Los Angeles, from sunny Southern California. Also, you see him on your Fox football broadcasts, FS1, and other places. Petros and Money in L.A. Hey, thanks for joining us, man. I appreciate it. I want to talk to you a little bit about USC because you got everybody fired up about it. But how are you doing, first of all?
I'm doing well. Pretty well. Thanks for having my dad on. He's got a couple of shows in San Pedro to promote down there where the ghetto meets the sea. And we are... We're here in May, so you know we're in the, right in the midst of the Dodgers here in Los Angeles, which is always a hot ticket, coming off a World Series championship. And other than that, you know, everything's going okay, just walking around the wasteland that used to be our lives in college football.
Did you, first of all, start with your dad. Did growing up with a big personality like that, like how did that impact you kids growing up in that household?
Well, I mean, it took me a long time, I think, to realize that I didn't have a very conventional childhood. You know, growing up in the restaurant was pretty wild. There were interesting characters from murderers to mob bosses to George Harrison to Gary Wright, the Dreamweaver, to anybody you could think of, John Robinson, to Don James. I mean, it was a wild place to grow up and to watch your father perform basically every night. And my older brother was such an Adonis and such a big football recruit and such a big deal that I was kind of sort of just his sidekick for so long and was just kind of around and always sort of found my niche talking and yelling and screaming and dealing with adults and running around and being in San Pedro as a young teen, putting pennies on the train track and watching them get all smashed. So, it was a very different kind of way to grow up. And certainly our job was to work at the liquor warehouse or the restaurant and to play football. And beyond that, they didn't really care what we did.
I know right out of high school, you go to Cal.
Yes.
And, you know, the story goes that you go to Cal and you end up like hitchhiking home. And
oh, that's a ride. Hitchhike to the airport.
Change your mind. And so... Was that greeted when you picked Cal? Was that greeted in the family, the USC family that is your family? Was that greeted as like, ooh, this is an outlier?
No. I mean, everybody was just shocked that I was going to go to college, let alone to go to... Seriously. I mean, I'm not even kidding. I mean, just go to college for free and had become a football star, so to speak. You know, I ran for 2,000 yards my senior year in high school and a bunch of really long runs, and suddenly... Because my older brother had played and was playing at USC and my father had played, I was offered scholarships. But USC wanted me to play defense, and they offered me to come in the spring. So basically sit around all fall and come in the spring, which is funny because what I ended up doing anyway when I left Cal. But I still regret leaving Cal. I regret signing the letter of intent and not honoring it. Transferring in that time held a serious stigma. There was very few guys that transferred, let alone within conference. And I dealt with the red tape of the Pac-10 for a long time. I think we paid for school at USC for a semester. You'd have to ask my dad to confirm that because I couldn't afford it.
I remember that.
So there was a lot there, but mostly just my own naivete and being a youthful idiot like we all are when we're 17, 18 years old. And I made a big mistake. And to this day, my favorite place to go up and call football games, I think you know this, is Cal. Close second is Corvallis.
There you go. What can you imagine what it would be like now being 17, 18, 19, the portal, the NIL money, the additional layer, because wasn't it confusing enough and tricky enough back then without that element?
But to be honest with you, John, college football, if it was like it is now back then, it would have filtered somebody like me out. Mm. You know, I had personal problems that were pretty well documented, you know, in those times. Washington State saw me as a character risk. So, I mean, I was not, that's the type of guy we just don't get into school anymore.
I know, we're friends now.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. You know, and look, I had had guys that I played with who had a lot more serious problems, so to speak. And there was a different way to get people into school before the internet. Let's just put it like that. So I'm very, me and a lot of teammates discuss this very often, that if we played in today's day and age, we quite simply would not be playing because they did not want people like us at the university for the most part.
The USC-Notre Dame rivalry came up this week. You did a big appearance on Fox National Show, but I want to dive a little deeper into that to you. You're a nostalgic guy. I love the tradition of rivalries. I love the Apple Cup. I love the Civil War. I don't want these things to go away. And yet, at every turn, they're being threatened in today's game.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, if you like college football, you'd better be adaptable to change. And I understand that, as you know, better than anybody. It's been a wild time. I mean, I'm still getting over the changes in the rules. From when I played, they changed the way you could do camp. No more double days on consecutive days. No more consecutive practices and pads. That changed everybody's life in the world of football. When I played, up until the year Rashidi Wheeler died and Corey Stringer that summer, there was no regulations really on what they could or couldn't do with you in camp, and the hours of how long they could keep you at college football were not very closely monitored. I mean, we had 3-a-days for 2.5 straight weeks without a day off. And I'm not kidding. I know it sounds like uphill both ways in the snow, and it was. So, I mean, that was a monumental change when I was young. And then when I became a broadcaster, just dealing with the whole targeting thing and cutting people, and coming to terms with the fact that plays that we saw as great football and courageous and heroic moments were now illegal. And we had guys in the production, you know, truck and different people, play-by-play guys. Oh, this is brutal. That guy's brutal. He should be kicked out. It's like, do you guys know what we're doing? Like, do you understand this? Like, I mean, we're watching young guys run around in plastic and bonk into each other just because you changed the rule a little bit. It's not all of a sudden like we're playing with Nerf guns. But anyway, so that was a major change. And now here we are in the portal and the NIL, and college football has been taken over by the television companies, one of which that I work for, as you know, and we've talked about that a bunch. But, I mean, honestly, none of that, in my opinion, has anything to do with USC Notre Dame and should not have anything to do with USC Notre Dame. And that's kind of the beauty of USC Notre Dame, is that it transcends conference realignment. It transcends the NIL, and it transcends all of these different twists and turns in the sport. If it could survive world wars, it should be able to survive the selfishness and the absolute myopic nature of the era we live in. It's ridiculous to think that it wouldn't, because Lincoln Riley doesn't like it. Who the hell is Lincoln Riley in the grand scheme of things when it comes to USC and Notre Dame? It just really bothers me that there's people who have never put on the uniform, don't even have an association with either university, that think of themselves as advocates for USC just because they carry water for a guy like Lincoln Riley. And I'm talking about Colin Cowherd and his ilk. And they sit here and try to tell everybody what's best for USC, and that the Big Ten is not viable anymore to have this non-conference game, as if in an expanded college football playoff, it's going to help USC to schedule Missouri State and Georgia State. And by the way, those are the two other non-cons on the schedule this year coming up for a team that has no buzz in Lincoln Riley's USC team. Imagine that, Johnny Cans. I mean, you're up there in Oregon sniffing the championship every single offseason, right? I mean, feeling it, right?
Yep.
Hoping, praying. And down here, the buzz for USC football is literally the hot new GM they hired from Notre Dame and the verbal commitments he's securing for the freshman class of 2026. What, I mean, that's not USC football. That's sad. I mean, that's pathetic. And Lincoln Riley trying to wriggle out of Notre Dame? I mean, I got news for you. If you can't beat Maryland or Minnesota, the hell are you worried about playing Notre Dame or not? Collect the revenue. I mean, the USC's not even close to competing. And if they were fourth in the Big Ten, trust me, having Notre Dame on their resume, win or lose, is a lot better than beating somebody 60 to nothing that is Missouri State. So it's very sad to me. I don't think it really has a foothold as far as the rivalry going away. I do have some predictions about what's next. But any argument being made, the Big Ten, travel, all of this stuff, it all goes by the wayside. It's USC Notre Dame. There's billions of dollars involved and the players are getting paid. Are you kidding? We're not going to play this? It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I am looking at Lincoln Riley, too, and I'm going, here's a guy who, what, 8 wins 2 years ago, 7 wins last season. He's probably not there if they don't owe him $88 million.
No, the buyout's the only thing that keeps him there. And he doesn't like or embrace any of the traditions of the place. He doesn't understand how to recruit or how to deal with the area. I mean, look, the formula to win at USC is simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. And it can be done, and it's been shown to be done generationally. I'm talking about for 100 years. You recruit the area, especially the fronts, defensive and offensive line. You cultivate them from within your area, within the program. It's one of the only places on the West Coast you can do that. And you will have sustained success. It's been proven. Recruit the area. Have an emphasis on the offensive and defensive lines. Don't call plays like an air raid coward, and you will win. You will win consistently year in and year out. But because of what USC has been and because they've tarnished their reputation through the Lane Kiffins and Sarkisians and Heltons, and now, I mean, I didn't see it coming, but Lincoln Riley, now where are the offensive linemen from L.A. going to be developed? They're going to goddamn Eugene. You know, when DeBoer was there, they were going up to Seattle. And USC has lost a grip on the thread that they need to hold to have any success. I mean, to have to hire a GM to sit here and say, hey, we need to recruit the area. We got to get in there at Modern Day, and we got to get in there like, and this GM is smart, Chad Bowden. Every time he's asked a question, you know what he says? Well, it's easy. It's easy to get verbals when you got the greatest recruiter in the world, Lincoln Riley. I mean, he says that like before and after and during every conversation. And it's obvious that this is a deficiency, a huge deficiency. And you say, my God, they're paying him $10 million a year with a $90 million buyout, and they got a GM running around town sticking his fingers in the dike trying to stop all these leaks. I mean, it's a sad situation. It does feel very much like college football is dead in L.A., if you know what I'm saying. I'm glad they're making money, though.
Is the alumni base restless, unhappy? Take the temperature for us, because outside in, we just sort of see the results.
Yeah, I think it's become an apathetic alumni base. I think they've alienated a great deal of them. And, you know, I think now they're sitting on their hands. They're screwed. Because when Lincoln Riley was hired, and yeah, it was during the pandemic, and yeah, it was kind of murky and weird, and Mike Bone ended up being like the definition of a village idiot as the USC athletic director, and showed himself over and over again. But when Lincoln Riley got hired at USC, all of us, we all sat back and said, well, USC football's fixed. They fixed it. Cost them a lot of money, but they fixed it. This guy, Caruso, wanted to run for mayor, and by God, he did, and he saved USC football on the way. And, yeah, they brought Caleb Williams, and they had that great year, but they couldn't beat Utah, and they lost to Tulane, in the Cotton Bowl, albeit a good Tulane team. and that's been it. I mean, that was it. I mean, USC is 15-13 in its last 28 games. No, I mean, that's crazy. That's not even close to what it needs to be. And I don't think you need to worry about playing Notre Dame or not. I think you need to worry about just beating Maryland or Minnesota. Yeah, maybe you should keep your traditions intact before. I mean, if we're not going to play USC Notre Dame, why don't we just change the colors of the uniforms and make it so we're like the teams on any given Sunday? Just generic BS. Because that's what it's becoming. I'm bothered by it, John.
No, I know you are, and you should be. And it bothers me, too, and I'm not a USC guy. I can imagine that if you had a connection that went back generations, that stuff would piss you off, and you'd watch some guy who just stepped in, put on a visor, and now he's trying to game the system a little bit so he can get to the playoff.
Yeah, from his tower in Palos Verdes. And it's like, my thing is, playing Notre Dame or not is not going to get you to the playoff or not. If it's only going to help you. And if you can't beat Notre Dame, you shouldn't be competing for the playoff year in and year out anyway. What are you afraid of? I mean, this makes them look so freaking soft. Pete Carroll, when he was at USC, and you know Pete and I don't get along, but my God, John, they played Arkansas. They played at Auburn. They played at Kansas State. They played at Nebraska. They played at Virginia. They went everywhere. They weren't scared of anybody, and they played like they weren't afraid. And it's just so sad to watch this unfold. And then for the other people that sit here and say, well, Notre Dame's got to, you know, swallow their pride and join the Big Ten. Why? When there's a whole network with a bunch of very bad announcers that are going to pay them a bunch of money to be on with them and run all their home games. Why would Notre Dame leave that? For what? To get in line with everybody else, they don't have to, and they shouldn't have to. They're Notre Dame football. It's the cradle of college football. It's a special place. Trust me. I took the field there. It's wonderful. It's great. And to rob that, or even to talk about robbing a generation of USC football players of that, I don't care if they're making NIL or not, or if they have diamond chains that they have to lock up in the locker room before they take the field. They shouldn't take that opportunity away and that tradition away. I am livid.
Petros Papadakis with us, Fox broadcaster, also from Petros and Money in Los Angeles. All right, before I let you go here, how big is the Dodger story, Shohei Ohtani, all that? You're coming off a World Series. Is that how big a part of that is your show? Because I know your show also deals with what Petros is doing today at home or what's going on in the household, which I love.
Yeah, I do a lot. I mean, only if it's organic does that stuff come up, but Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. You know, the Dodgers have always been, the most visited sport on earth because it's huge, Dodger Stadium, and they have 80-plus home games, so there's always that number. They are the most visited sport on earth. The Latino fan base, a lot of it because of Fernando, who passed away, has been the coolest thing about being a Dodger fan and the communal vibe with all the people at Dodger Stadium, guys with neck tattoos and guys with their long sleeve Oxford Brooks Brothers on coming from downtown. They're high-fiving at Dodger Stadium. It's always been that way. And that's a beautiful thing. Why everybody pays $50 for a beer, you know, I don't know, but it happens. And we do it. And $60 for parking and all that stuff. But now with Ohtani, it's like you hit a nitrous button on that. It's like Taylor Swift with the NFL. You didn't think it could get bigger. And now, just like the outlet malls and things like that around here, and of course you guys are on the Pacific Rim as well, so not really a stranger to it, and the Ichiro thing in Seattle was big, but two or three tourist buses a day show up at the Dodger Clubhouse store, with or without there being a game. And they all buy a $500 Ohtani jersey. You know what I mean? I mean, it's crazy the level that it's become. The Japanese advertising, the sushi, and all the different things that they have available at Dodger Stadium. And it's been a lot of fun. And it's not just Ohtani. Of course, it is just Ohtani. But they have Yoshi Yamamoto, who's pitching great. And this kid, Haesung Kim, the Korean kid, who's been really exciting. So they've really embraced the Pacific Rim. And I think it's paid off. That just goes to show, if you have a hedge fund that runs a team and not the daughter of a crazed, maybe outdated owner, they sort of have a good idea on how to be a steward of the franchise.
Isn't that funny how that works? Like, I watch the Blazers, and they've got a trustee as the owner, and you just go, they're never going to find their way there. You could give them the map, they wouldn't find their way there. And that other franchises, just they have it figured out. They look around. They do the thing that makes sense. They just make smart move after smart move. Does it take any of the shine away that the Dodgers should win with the payroll they have and the players they have? Or do people just sort of go, this is the greatest thing ever because they're winning? Because
they won. They beat the Yankees last year. And before that, they'd have this 100-win season, and they'd end up losing in the divisional round to a team that they dominated all regular season, like the Padres or the D-backs. The Nationals took them out in one of those. And trust me, here at the station, the sky is falling, right? Because they already billed for they thought the Dodgers would go to the World Series. And now I have to go put my stocking on and get out in the gutter. And I'm live from BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse all summer to make up some of that money that they already spent that they never made. So it's a funny little dance because the team is so good. And they project that they're going to have a lot of playoff games to sell every single year. But I think there's been enough early exits that the city, I mean, 2020 was 2020, whatever. And the Laker thing was even smaller than the Dodger championship in 2020. But the biggest day in LA sports history that I can remember, and I was here for the 1984 Olympics, was the Dodger parade after they beat the Yankees. And the absolute abject joy that happens in town because of the cultural amalgamation of the city. And they're all connected to that one team. It's really outpaced the Lakers and outpaced everybody. So I think they still appreciate the victory. But if they lose two or three games straight, it's always fun because we get to hit the panic button and fire everybody. And it's a fun little irrational roller coaster to ride.
I am excited to see what the Pac-12 does with its new world media rights deal, and hoping that you end up calling some Pac-12 after dark games.
I think
again.
There's a good chance of that. I mean, I have no inside information, but I know Fox likes to have a great West Coast footprint, and I know the Mountain West, as we know it, is going away, and it would be great to be back under that banner, and I'm proud of that banner, so I'd love to be back on it, yeah.
Petros Papadakis, thank you, man. You're the best. I appreciate
you. You're the best, Johnny Cash.
You're the best.
And thank you for being so great to my family. Appreciate you.
You bet, man.